Christ is still the King.
Welcome to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher on Iowa Catholic Radio. Every Wednesday, diving deep in the truth of the Catholic Church and restoring all things in Christ. The Uncommon Good, live from the Mercy Live Up Studio.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
I'm Dr. Bud Maher.
We are coming to you live from Des Moines, Iowa, where it has rained 400 of the 365 days a year. Mercy Live Up Studio, where there is not rain, so I can't complain. Iowa Catholic Radio, 1150 AM, 88.5 FM, 94.5 FM. Streaming live, iowacatholicradio.com. And then if you have the Iowa Catholic Radio app, brought to you by Blessman Ministries and the People's Abstract Company, you can listen to us anywhere except maybe the dark side of the moon. I think that's what Pink Floyd was getting at, Bud. Does that sound correct?
I think that's about right. I'm trying to think of other places you might not be able to watch. Or watch. Listen to our show.
Probably Wrigley Field. They don't have, like, do they even have lights? I forget. Like, that used to be a thing, right? They couldn't play at night or
do they let practicing on Tuesdays. Catholics in Wrigley Field?
Yeah, I keep forgetting. But I'm sure that we have a bunch of friends who will inform us whether they have internet at Wrigley Field. But we'll ask them later. No problems. So brought to you always, our show underwritten by Mercy College of Health Sciences, where we have a lot of interesting and fun things coming up. One thing that we want to let you know is the public is invited May 31st, Wednesday at 5 p.m. in the Brennan Hall Chapel. We're going to have May crowning on the Feast of the Visitation of Mary. A lot of people do the May crowning at the beginning of the year. How everything works out with our schedule, we thought we'd cap off the month of Mary. So May 31st, Wednesday, 5 p.m., everyone is invited. May crowning, consecration to Mary, everything going on like that. Excuse me. We also have one thing, Bud, that I think is exciting when we talk about students coming to Mercy College. We started Catherine's Cabinet, which is basically a food cabinet for people who might have food insecurities. But I've been really surprised about how many people that's something really comforting they hear when they know that their kids are coming. There's a place that will take care of them like that.
Yeah, I think sometimes at a place like college or university life, we don't think of individuals being food insecure maybe in those contexts, but you know, just the daily struggles of getting by. I mean, a lot of Americans face those things nowadays, so we want to make sure as a community that anyone that's a part of us that they've got that available to them.
This was the brainchild of a lot of people. I was very happy to get in on the process already when it was already really rolling ahead, but just as a point of reference, if you want to give a donation, just get in contact with me. If you do mchs.edu/cm, that's the campus ministry website, mchs.edu/cm, and we can set up a time to get your donation. Also, as always, underwritten by Cartridge World.
Cartridge World is your place to go for high-performance printing products to help you save time, money, and print great. It's perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink.
801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online, cartridgeworld.com. Bud, today we have a very interesting topic. We're bringing back our European correspondent, Jared Schumacher, but he also is going to bring a buddy with him, Father Aaron Westman. They're both getting their PhDs in jolly old Belgium. That's jolly old England. What do they call it? Is it?
They're just
bellicose old Belgium.
Are they grumpy or cheery in Belgium? I forget.
I don't know.
In France.
I mean, they have good beer.
Yeah, they're probably happy.
They're probably happy. But at any rate, so there are foreign correspondents looking at Europe. They have been trekking around. They were at a conference on secularism in France during the French elections, or right around there. So I think they have a lot of interesting perspectives to talk to us about. So stick around. In a minute, we'll be back with The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher, with our European correspondents, Jared Schumacher, Father Aaron Westman, coming up. See you in a bit.
Thank you, CTI Ready Mix, for your support of Dowling Catholic Boys baseball broadcast. CTI Ready Mix has been serving Central Iowa since 2004 and has become a leader in Ready Mix concrete production. With 50 mixer trucks and locations in Johnston, Grimes, Elkhart, West Des Moines, and Carlisle, they are capable of supplying even the largest projects in Central and North Iowa. CTI Ready Mix, 1001 Southeast 37th Street, Grimes, 515-276-9567. Online at cti-ia.net.
Don't miss the second annual Summer at the Well Women's Gathering Saturday, June 24th at St. Thomas Aquinas Catholic Church in Indianola. You will experience a day full of faith, fellowship, and fun, inspirational talks by local speakers, and uplifting praise and worship music with adoration and mass. $65 registration, lunch, and dinner are included. Scholarships available. Registration required before June 9th. Go to thewelldesmoines.com.
We're back with the Uncommon Good. One of the things we wanted to talk about when we come to the show, so real quick, bud, we have a life-changing moment happening June 7th. June 7th, we're going to go to, well, a full hour, but then the extra 10 minutes. On June 7th, Wednesday, our show will actually start on at 8:30 a.m., 8:30 to 9:40 a.m., and it's a great honor to be considered to do this. Also, we're all sort of freaking out because we just signed up to talk a whole lot.
Well, you and the leadership here at the station have a lot of faith in my ability to get up and be alert by 8:30.
Well,
I know that sounds funny to the early birds out there, but that's how it rolls.
We'll try to like record some of your big zinger statements. So like if you're nodding off,
you can just patch me in.
Yeah, it can just be like a snarky comment about the Cubs or something about Nebraska. It will work out, bud. Okay. Don't worry about it. Now, to get people who aren't snarky about the Cubs, we keep getting like bad looks. So I think this is a Houston Astros fan. So that's pretty benign, right? Okay. So we have our foreign correspondents, Jared Schumacher, who's been on the show. So a PhD researcher in political theology at the Catholic University of Louvain. And then special emphasis in Catholic social teaching. But we also have Father Aaron Westman, Roman Catholic priest, member of the Glen Mary Home Missioners, which is a religious community doing missionary work primarily in the south of in the U.S. and in Appalachia. He, too, is a doctoral student at the Catholic University of Louvain, where he studies the problem of secularization from a missiological perspective. Father Aaron and Jared, how are you guys doing?
Doing really well.
Good, thanks.
So, It's always impressive that we get to use technology for wonderful things like baseball scores, but also keeping up with people across the world who we've met in the flesh, but now thanks to the prominence of robots, we can talk to at will. So we're really glad to get to talk to you guys. I think to start out, if you want to maybe give some personal insight for people, what's it like to be an American convert and an American priest running around Europe? I think sometimes people think, hey, it's Europe, you know, a lot of our ancestors came from there. It must be pretty similar. I'm guessing that it's really not.
Yeah, it is very interesting. Sorry, I'm Jared, just so your audience knows which one of us is speaking, since we're sharing a microphone.
No problem.
It's very interesting because my last name is Schumacher, which is a German name, and you know, in the States, people might have heard of Joel Schumacher, the director, but in Europe, Michael Schumacher, the famous Formula One race car driver, is so. Whenever anyone sees my name, they immediately assume I'm German and either start speaking German, or immediately ask if I'm in any way related because he's a billionaire, and I'm assuming they might then think I have some money, which of course I don't.
He doesn't have any money.
But no, it is, you know, America's a melting pot and has so many interesting influences. Europe is much less, I mean, it's multicultural in many respects, but it just has such a different feel from the American context. My own, in America, you can have a broad range of experiences. In Europe, things are much more tightly packed, much more tightly knit, and cultural differences ramify in part because of the vast number of languages. You know, Europe itself is smaller than the United States and just landmass size. And having so many languages in such a small region in America, we have, you know, a couple of, you know, in the South you have Spanish and such, but just big cultural differences. And then on top of that, theological differences, because, you know, starting in the – basically from the Protestant Reformation on, you had a large number of wars fought in Europe – between various sects and political maneuverings and things, as you guys know. So it is different. It feels different. Anyone who's traveled around here and lived here has felt it. Personally, I as I said last time I was on, I sit in my hole in the library and write my dissertation, so I don't have very many experiences to speak of from the last few years. But before that, living in Lithuania for 3 years, and then Belgium, two Catholic countries, but two very different Catholic countries. Father Aaron can speak to his own experiences, which are different.
Yeah, so I'll speak a little bit from kind of an ecclesial perspective. So first of all, I really enjoyed being here in Europe in many ways, and I have learned a lot, probably more from just living here than I maybe even have from all the studies that I've been doing trying to write my dissertation. But since I'm from a missionary community, I wanted to go to a culture where I knew that Christianity was struggling. And that might sound kind of bold or brave, which I'm not very bold or brave. Maybe more stupid is the right way to say it. But so I looked into coming to Belgium, which actually thought it would be a pretty good idea. And in coming here, I realized that, in fact, Catholicism and Christianity are struggling far more than I could have ever imagined. I go to places in the United States where there is absolutely no Catholic presence as a community, as Glenmary, and start churches from scratch. And that, in fact, probably has been easier in my experience than trying to be a Catholic priest here in Leuven and in Belgium. For just a couple of examples, you know, I walk down the street with my collar on, and people literally stop in their tracks. They stare at me, and they're just confused. They have no idea how this person, who is still relatively young, could be a Catholic priest. And the people will ask me, "Are you actually a priest?" Which I respond, "Well, I think so. I think my ordination was valid." And then they always follow up with, "So you really believe in God?" And I say, "Yeah, I believe in God." And they just are stunned, and they're like a deer in the headlights. I mean, they don't even know how to respond to that. So, and this is just, you know, the church is apparently 30 or even 40 years ago, we're still quite filled here in Belgium. So we're talking about one or two generations, and now they've basically forgotten Christianity, and in many ways anyways, and forgotten their sort of Catholic history and their Catholic past.
Thanks, guys. This is Bud Maher, and hearing you talk about those recent developments in terms of the loss of faith in different parts of Europe, you know, as kind of an outsider, when I read commentary on Europe, I hear about this sort of malaise, like the sorts of things that you're talking about. What do you think are some of the roots of those developments?
So I think one can't underestimate, first of all, the effect of the philosophy going into and the actions coming out of the French Revolution and what they typically call laïcité. I didn't experience this so much in the U.S., but when I came here to Europe, you begin to see that there was really a concerted effort, mainly by a lot of elites, but also philosophers. And then this also played itself out in a practical way to basically push the church out of positions of authority or power. Sometimes this was done very violently, but in many ways it was just done with kind of trying to change the narrative about Christianity, that Christianity is somehow backwards. Christianity is against progress. Christianity is against science. And so I think that that is one of the differences, at least, that one could highlight between the United States and Europe. On the other hand, I would say that there is some importance to the idea that the church was sort of involved in so many aspects of life. Like this is the case here in Belgium 50 years ago. I mean, the church was determining decisions that perhaps maybe the church was overstepping its bounds. And the faith maybe wasn't as interiorized. It was very much a kind of cultural Catholicism because structurally the church was everywhere. Culturally, the church was everywhere. And when the 60s hit, especially Western Europe, people realized that, in fact, they did not want the church involved in their lives like it once was. And they basically rebelled against Christianity and Catholicism in ways that I would say are far more profound than what happened in the United States. I mean, 1968, for many Western Europeans, is a year of tumult, more so than I would say is the case for people in the United States.
This is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. We're talking with Jared Schumacher and Father Aaron Westman. Guys, one of the things that I think is really interesting in these narratives, first of all, it's very important, I think, for both of us to go, for all of us in the United States, to not only think about the history of Europe, to know the history of Europe well, but also to talk about the differences between what it looks like here in the United States as opposed to Europe. But there's another thing that I think is really interesting. If you go and read in the medieval literature, it's not like the church, you know, had all her ducks in a row then. You know, all you got to do is read Chaucer to know that people thought maybe the church wasn't firing on all cylinders, as it were. To me, it starts to be interesting when you see that someone, like a culture that understands that it's, you know, clay vessels running the church, so there'll be mistakes, and we're going to, like, complain, but yeah, you know, that's what you do because you love something. To, like you said, that spirit of 68, which really is a spirit of the French Revolution come to full prominence. And so when Americans think, like, well, this won't happen to us because we have a sort of different take, we don't have, like, the cultural Catholicism of Belgium or something like this, I think we need to be wary and take a step back, because there's a way in which, even if we don't follow the exact historical track record of Europe, that we can have that moment, like you said, within a generation or two, where people go from, hey, the church has flaws, of course it does, to the church is the root of all the problems that we have.
Right. No, I mean, I'm a big believer in you know, Weaver's axiom, ideas have consequences. And the idea of secular forms of government have certain consequences for the way power is distributed, the way societies organize themselves. And there was a great shrewdness in the American system and the way in which it self-limited certain forms of power. But the question has always sort of been percolating underneath that history of how sustainable it was and what cultural arrangements enabled those checks and balances. And I'm not just talking about, you know, the judicial, legislative, and executive checks and balances, but also internal personalized checks and balances. And what I think the danger for the states is that even though it wasn't, say, pure Catholic or pure one particular Protestant denomination, what you had was a general cultural Christianity in the United States for the first 200 years. And what I think we're seeing is what some sociologists are calling, you know, the post-Christian turn, where we now have a generation of people who are beginning to have been raised not attending church as often as their parents, seeing it as optional rather than something that's inherent in the way life is lived. And there are consequences to that change, that shift. And so while you're absolutely right, there is differences between the American situation and the European situation, different cultures, different context, different cultures, different contexts. There are these things, these overarching similarities, which we can read lessons from across the continent in both directions. What Americans need to be wary of is placing too great trust in politics to solve all of our problems. And that is both from the right and from the left. So you have some people, you know, putting all their emphasis, all their political activity into getting the right representative elective. And so all of these elections take on almost apocalyptic importance for people's lives. The same thing on the left, right? If only this person would have won the election, you know, we'd be moving our way towards the utopia. And I think what I appreciate about the healthy Catholic balance is the ability to criticize both sides, but to be able to understand that without larger cultural influences and without our own religious participation, the internalization of the faith, the execution of the practices of the faith in our own lives, and then spreading that in our small circles and then growing that, there is a very real chance that America will have the same kind of anti-Christian form of secularism take root. And it's something that really needs to be kept an eye on in the American context.
Jared, sort of building on that point, and Father, when we think about the church's response to these sort of developments that can make us a little bit anxious, I don't want to have you choose this morning between popes, but I've noticed with Pope Francis kind of a shift in language from Pope Benedict in terms of thinking about the church's relationship to the world. So Francis sometimes talks about the church as a field hospital, and this idea that if people are wounded, you don't start with the depths of the faith. You have to kind of tend to wounds before you're able to have that kind of constructive discipling and transmission of doctrine. Whereas with Pope Benedict, especially when he was thinking about the church in Europe, he would talk about the church as a creative minority, and this idea that you have to, in some ways, focus internally on your own community and strengthen that identity before you can have something to give the world. With those kind of images in play, how do you think about? I know, Father, you're a missionary, and your ministry here in the States, but also some of your activities in Europe.
Yeah, I think this is a great question. I mean, you won't get me to choose between two popes on the radio like this.
Go.
I appreciate the comment. I mean, I don't want to. This isn't a cop out answer, but I do think that the church's missionary approach has to be dynamic. I think that the United States is still big enough that in different places in the United States, the church can apply a sort of different approach. There may be the case that in some moments, in some places, you know, Christians or the church has to kind of sort of pull back a little bit, focus on Christian formation and Catholic self-identity. Because if you don't have an identity as a Catholic, it's nearly impossible to go out to the world with the good news. And I think that the way in which Pope Francis has emphasized the church as being missionary, as being a field hospital, all that is excellent. And I think we can never stop, you know, bringing the gospel even to the peripheries, but we have to do so with a strong kind of Catholic identity. I mean, to be Catholic is really to be missionary. And so the more we grow in our own identity as Catholics and our own relationship with Christ, the more we will be propelled, you know, into all the areas of society, and the more we can be a field hospital, but without that strong identity, it's going to be very, very difficult.
Yeah, if I could just throw on two cents there at the end of that great response. We have to take that metaphor of his seriously, field hospital. The image he used in the interview was meant to show the dynamic nature of the church, its ability to change locations when necessary. But some people, some victims, some wounds can't, you know, we lifelike people in emergency situations, but to stable areas. And so thinking of the church as both having something that moves, namely the helicopter to transport people, the ambulances and things, but also something which remains and stays is absolutely crucial to providing the kind of stability, but the flexibility that's necessary to help heal the world's wounds.
Yeah, and if I could just jump in there on that to say one kind of general comment and one that's a little more provocative maybe. The first thing is to say that our experience, I could probably speak for Jared and his family too, of being here in Belgium is that we have St. Quentin's Catholic Church, which is an English-speaking international community. And I think this kind of serves as our base, if you will. I mean, we go there. We just try to put on a good liturgy that's recognizably Catholic. We try to have good preaching. We try to have some kind of community. And so that we can go out into a world around here which is really not very much Catholic anymore. And we can encounter a lot of people who are hurting or sick. And in many ways, and I would credit Jared's family this, to bring then people to the church or to bring them to our families to share the gospel with them in whatever way we might be able to. The other perhaps more provocative comment is that I think that Pope Francis is coming from the South, from South America, perhaps puts him in a different position to see the kind of problem or the crisis in the Western world in a little bit of a different light. I kind of appreciated many of the things that Benedict wrote about, And I think that's partly because I think he knew the kind of deep problem that secularism is right now, both in, you know, Western Europe, but also the way it's sort of growing in the United States. And so I think I find myself at many times going back to Benedict XVI's writings and finding wisdom there. But I don't want to discredit Pope Francis by any means. I really like his missionary spirit, being a missionary myself, and I think that he still has a lot to offer to the church.
This is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher. We're speaking with Jared Schumacher and Father Aaron Westman. The hospital thing makes me think of something else I've heard in a slightly different angle, but I think you guys might agree. Russell Hittinger, who's a big influence on my life, has always pointed out that the unique situation of contemporary Catholicism is living in a world where a lot of intermediate institutions have disappeared. So, you know, if you want to talk about what Christendom was, people always think like either the hyper religious individual or like the potentates and the popes. But actually what Christendom was is you couldn't swing a dead cat around without hitting some intermediate institution that had Catholicism deep in its veins, like universities, hospitals, things like this. You could, you know, we work at a university that's attached to a hospital system, and we know the pressures pulling on that hospital system, on those universities, on everybody to sort of relieve ourselves of duties to either the individual or the state. So the religion is either just a personal thing individuals do, and then social services are things that governments do, and in between, there's nothing else. And so it seems to me when you look at a place like Father Appalachia, where you work, part of the degradation of that place is facing is there's just not intermediate institutions anymore. Either the government is doing something or individuals, and then there's not really something else. You guys were at a conference during the French elections, and that seems to me to be the big fight they're all having is, you know, now it's not enough that governments are the sort of nexus of these powers. It has to be the European Union. Or then other people go, absolutely not. It needs to be more parochial. So there seems to be these fights that if we're going to talk about a field hospital, part of the difficulty with how secularism has worked is we can't imagine medium-sized, intermediate interactions of people anymore. It's either all individual, all monad, or nothing else. Does that seem to contribute to some of the things you guys are talking about?
Yeah, you know, this is an excellent point, and you can actually see it architecturally right here in Leuven. So back in the medieval period, you had the Catholic Church in the center of the city. Right across from it, you had the State House, so the sign of the political authority. And then sort of right across from those two, you have the guilds, the guild office, where you had this sort of intermediate group, which could sort of serve as kind of a way to bring people together, to give them a kind of authority, to sort of have a check and balance within the system. And that was the kind of, I would say, medieval balance, which we can't even imagine today, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. The other thing about Appalachia, this is absolutely the case in Appalachia. I mean, when we need to help somebody, there are so few institutions that are present in these areas where this can take place. When we try to start a Catholic community, it actually goes, this whole idea of community in many ways goes against the grain of the culture in Appalachia, because it's either individuals or it's the government, and there's sort of nothing in between. But I think that's something that we can really offer to people through our faith, through Christianity, and also through the church, is to kind of have the church be sort of its own little kind of political or its own little kind of polis, as you will, a sort of political body that works as an intermediary group.
Mm-hmm. No, architecturally, Father Aaron's point, even inside the church, each of the antechambers, each of the small altars were provided for by the guilds. And so each had their own altarpiece. All of the famous artwork, medieval artwork, is artwork that was usually typically done, triptychs and things, above the altarpieces paid for by each of the respective guilds. So when you go to Ghent, for example, a city in Belgium has a church which has been turned into a museum, not atypical for Europe, but it's a museum of altarpieces that you can see all – or wait, is this in Antwerp or in Ghent that I'm thinking of?
Antwerp,
not Ghent. And it's functionally a museum for former altarpieces, but each altar – piece is represented by a guild, and each of these guilds were centers of life for entire trades of people. And so people were organized, were committed to these things. The only analog we have would be something like a political party. They'd feud their guild like we, similar to how we viewed a political party. But the nice thing about viewing a guild that way is it actually produced something physical. It met people's actual needs, put, you know, food in mouths, provided a sense of community. But because the church welcomed these guilds and integrated them into her life, they it wasn't adversarial. You know, Father Aaron, before we came on, and I were talking about one of the major problems we see happening in the States, but also in Europe as well, is the growing polarization of things. There's nothing that can keep these tensions from collapsing and isolating people. And that role was played by the church in the medieval period, and there's just nothing like that anymore.
Well, guys, yeah, no. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut you off. We're running out of time, and I got to end on this image because it's so powerful, that the church had guilds, every altar had a guild servicing it, and now in Belgium they're museums. And I mean, that's the sort of image of like where we came from, what here in the United States we might face, and what we have to keep in mind about what we're working against. It's not just, like you said, electing the right officials, and it's not just a matter of changing my heart. It's how do we get small groups and bands of people to be operative in the filled hospital that is the current church.
Bo, I feel like we need to have these guys back. I still have like three questions in the kitty. So.
Yeah, well, guys, we're like I said, starting in June 7th, we're going 1 hour and 10 minutes, so we'll have you back, and we can really talk it all out then. All right, guys?
Sounds great.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
God bless. This is the Uncommon Good. We'll be back in a minute.
Carell Contractor serves Des Moines and Central Iowa for all earth-moving and excavating needs. Family-owned since 1959, Carell Contractor will complete a project you can be proud of on budget and on time. Carell Contractor, 515-221-9669. CarellContractor.com.
Don't miss the second annual Summer at the Well Women's Gathering, Saturday, June 24th at St. Thomas Aquinas Catholic Church in Indianola. You will experience a day full of faith, fellowship, and fun, inspirational talks by local speakers, and uplifting praise and worship music with adoration and mass. $65 registration, lunch, and dinner are included. Scholarships available. Registration required before June 9th. Go to thewelldesmoines.com.
Thank you to Mercy College of Health Sciences, downtown Des Moines, for underwriting the Uncommon Good with me, Bo Bonner.
And I'm Dr. Bud Marr.
We're heard every Wednesday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. on the Iowa Catholic Radio Network.
A fun and engaging new show that we hope our listeners will love. Be sure to listen. Thanks. We're back on the Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr. Bo, a great moments in church history 2 weeks in a row. I don't think we've pulled this off for a while.
I think that life is good.
All right, but this one is in honor of Saint Denis, one of the patron saints of France. So very applicable to our topic today. Let's roll it.
And now, great moments in church history. The year 250. The place, the Roman province of Gaul. Saint Denis, first bishop of Paris, travels the countryside with several companions, converting pagans left and right.
The team from Paris is doing whatever they want out on the field today, Kent. The pagan defenses are no match for their multifaceted attack. This is turning into a rout!
The pagan priests were clearly alarmed by their loss of followers. Realizing their situation was dire, they goaded the Roman refs, those stinking parochial governors, to throw the game in their favor.
Oh no, Bob. Right when it looked like Denis and companions had the game in hand, the line judge just called two personal fouls on a crucial possession. He ejected Rusticus and Lotharius from the game. Those were Denis' best weapons to throw to.
To add insult to injury, this joke of an officiating crew then ordered Denis to be executed by beheading. But on that afternoon, the proclamation of the gospel would not be stopped.
They just decapitated Denis, Kent, but he would not be denied. He simply picked up his head and sprinted the entire length of the field, preaching a sermon the entire way!
Besides being one of the cephalophores, or head carriers in the martyrology, Saint Denis was also declared the patron saint of France. Today, he is honored as one of the 14 holy helpers, specifically being evoked against diabolical possession and headaches.
this has been another Great Moments in Church History. Man, but that was a really great one you wrote, and I really tried to practice the foreign pronunciations.
Do you work on your French pronunciation before bedtime?
Baguette.
I could da-da.
Paris.
If only we could smoke in the studio, we could really be French about the whole thing.
Existentialism.
No, I mean, our great moments, of course, there's a lighthearted element to it, but when I was writing that last night, I was really, I ended in prayer. You know, on my mind was, of course, the Manchester bombing this week, and we just, in the Mass, we talk about our reliance on the intercession of all the saints, and this time in history, well, every moment in history, but especially today, we're just reminded of the way that our culture in various ways, but also Europe, has strayed from the gospel truly, and just this kind of like urgency that we need to have with prayer, asking God to bring peace to our homes and our lands, and to intervene in a powerful way, because we're in a tough spot in a lot of ways.
What I love about this story, though, is the sort of defiance of the faith, maybe just as a rowdy person. That's what I want to say to the devil and the world. It's like, dude, chop our heads off, and we're going to still run around preaching sermons. And I think they're doing a good job of cutting our heads off, quote-unquote, in many ways and many aspects, but it don't matter. Keep cutting our heads off, bros. We're going to keep preaching the gospel. So I think it's a great image to end on. A few things coming up, guys. June 24th, we have Strongman Day, June 24th, 2017. You can go look on the Man Up Des Moines Facebook page. $30 includes lunch. People throwing around stuff.
How's your strongman training coming?
If by that you mean like that my stomach muscles no longer work as they should, great, bud. I'm going to pull something.
I'll be lifting burritos.
Yeah, I'm gonna make sure to write a last will and testament before I do anything out there that day. So yeah, strongman. We also have Bible in a Year, 5:30 a.m. And then finally, we had a wonderful carathon, but we always want to let you guys know a nonprofit. We'd love to have you guys be a part of our ministry. So if you feel moved in your heart, please feel free to send in donations. With that, we want to wish you may the Prince of Peace, Jesus Christ, dwell in your hearts, in your family, in our city, in our entire county, state, country, world, galaxy, universe, all that there is. Jesus Christ, reign over all of us. Thank you. This has been The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher. We will be back next Wednesday. Take care.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard Wednesdays at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. on Iowa Catholic Radio and on the official Iowa Catholic Radio app.